Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson with Ben Johnson, Paddy Fitzsimons and Neil Docking to have a chat about, well, predominantly Liverpool's first pre-season friendly, but they're only doing two against Stuttgart, obviously Salzburg on Tuesday at 3 p.m. And we are now just 6 days away from the Community Shield. And I'll go to you first on this one, Ben. I think the sheer madness and lack of convention around this season is about to hit people. There's a good piece by Jonathan Northcroft in the Sunday Times today where he references that all the top sides will have to play 35 games in 109 days over the course of the middle of the season. That's to come for us. There is the very fact the Community Shield's next week, and then all the players go off on international duty in different places before reconvening. There is the idea that you're only getting two pre-season friendlies. Everton managed to get a valiant 3-3 draw up against Blackburn yesterday, and fair play to them for that. So all of this is a reminder that it's going to be a mad year, and that game in a rain-sodden pitch that I think Jurgen Klopp might have said, you know what, let's not bother with it. He goes ahead with it because he needs to get 45 minutes of competitive football into two sets of players' legs.
Yeah, it is going to be a strange season, and I think the other thing to notice is that it's a strange pre-season in that the players aren't coming back after 4-5 weeks off. They're not all drifting back at different times. They're all coming back at the pretty much the same time with 2 weeks break. So they're all fit. And I think you see that yesterday when he picks the team he picks at the start. You never really ever see that in pre-season, especially not the first pre-season game. He picks arguably a full-strength team with the exception possibly of Curtis Jones in, but that's interesting in itself, I think. So I think, yeah, it is going to be a mad season, and I think, the amount of work they're going to have to do is going to be unparalleled. You normally have little patches in seasons where you have these mad patches, like Liverpool, the last 3 or 4 years, that period after the sort of second international break when the Champions League kicks in, up until the Champions League drops off. You play three games a week, and then you have a little break, and then you have the mad Christmas period, and then it sort of peters out a bit. Well, that's this season, the whole season, every three games you're playing, lads, by the way, and you sort of wonder why there's, like, I was convinced Shaqiri would go in the summer, and yet the murmurings knocking about it that he might stay. And you start thinking, well, that's probably because we're going to need to rotate pretty much every other game. So I thought it was interesting yesterday watching the team he picked, pretty much full strength, pretty much started off where they were when they left off. The levels haven't dropped, certainly. And it will be interesting. It will be interesting to see how we approach the season. Because it is completely different. It's going to be completely different. And, you know, whoever adapts the best out of all of the teams is probably going to win everything.
Paddy, there was something yesterday, you mentioned Curtis Jones there, Ben, and watching that first half side, it felt like it had a nice balance to it. we've watched Liverpool teams across the last sort of 12 months, or maybe even a tiny little bit before, but especially in the last 12 months, when he's gone Fabinho, Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain. And it's always felt like it hasn't quite had the right balance to it. And that could just be that the players have got a lack of familiarity. They both Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain get dropped into that 11 a bit. It's not like they build towards it, they get lashed in. It's worth saying that. But I felt that midfield yesterday, it did have a nice balance to it between those three players.
Yeah, I wonder if it's something to do with, I mean, a few people picked up on it, but just the presence of Curtis Jones, like, he looks like he's got about 3 inches taller.
I don't know how he's done this, but he has, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we only seen him 2 weeks ago and he somehow managed to gain 3 inches. And I think it's, not to criticise Chamberlain too much, but you even watched the game like yesterday and think does Jones do a bit more defensively going backwards as well, just geophysicality-wise. And it's obviously important to, you know, take into account the opposition and things, and we haven't seen that necessarily against a side like a Genk, for example, which was the one last season when it was Keita and Chamberlain, and we looked like we didn't have a midfield, essentially. But I think just on it, I think Jono mentioned it as well, I think one of the things about the side yesterday that was a bit surprising and things is, we're not used to seeing that in pre-season, but the main thing about that is it's because they're never normally all there together, and that's the biggest difference about this pre-season, that he's managed to get them all. And I think the point about Jones being in the side is sort of really interesting in a sense, because he doesn't have to put him in that first half side, and you wonder if he is having a look at it and saying, like, I want to see him in a side like this with all the players. And the more you see of him, he just doesn't look out of place at all, if anything. He looks like he's giving us something different to anyone else on the side. It's not like it's, you look at it and go, well, it's one of Chamberlain or Jones or one of Keita or Jones. You look like he's sort of his own identity as a player now, and he's giving you something that others aren't. And I think, I'm sure we'll come on to talk about it with the Community Shield, less than a week away now. You wonder if that first half team's a little eye on that, thinking, well, I'll see how they get on here together and I'll see how this looks. Because I think we're past the point of talking about Curtis Jones as just, you know, a youth player coming into the squad now. I think he's an option for the first 11 in most games this season now. And I think the more you see of him, the more, you know, he doesn't look out of sort, and the more you can imagine, you know, him starting next Sunday against an Arsenal, or even him starting Leeds at home, you wouldn't be stunned now the more you see him.
It's a relatively quick rise, while simultaneously haven't been talked about for 2 years, Neil. You know, there was an old, I think it was Dave Spike, who worked with Peter Kay when he was 50, went on a stand-up tour and called himself Overnight Sensation. That you've got to be careful not to do that here with Curtis Jones, because we have been talking about him. I saw him play pre-season football a couple of years ago. But the flip side is that, you know, he's taken these opportunities that have emerged post the coronavirus situation. He's got his first goal at Anfield. He's had his first start. He's had his involvement in this Liverpool side. And it feels as though this little mini sort of compressed pre-season might be another thing he's using as a springboard to say, as Paddy says, don't think of me as young player emerging. I'm wearing number 17. Think of me as one of your squad.
Yeah, absolutely. I was watching the game on LFC TV, which is an unusual experience in itself. And John Aldridge was saying how whenever Jones has featured, he's always made an impact.
Yeah.
He's, you know, in his small, whether it's been a cameo or, you know, off the bench, he always seems to either create a chance or, you know, or score a goal or make an impact. He seems to have grabbed, reminds me of something Gerrard said about when you're trying to get into the team, every opportunity you get, you've got to like grab it by the scruff of the neck and say, this is my opportunity to show I belong. And I really feel like Jones has done that. I mean, first things first, I thought they all looked great in the kit yesterday. I feel like that has to be said. They all look great in the new kit. That was one of the first things I wanted to see. Do they all look great? Yes, they do. It was strange watching at that weird angle, you know, like that angle that you don't normally watch matches now.
It was like being at the front of the main.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it? I said to my wife, I got on the Chromecast, you know, on the TV from my laptop. And I said to my wife, I don't like this angle, you know. And she said, why don't you sit on that sofa over there? Not where I'm sitting, the camera. So it was a bit disorientating. I felt like I couldn't really get to grips with it for the first 5-10.
It was one of them where Andy Robertson could have been doing anything and you wouldn't have had the faintest idea. Yeah.
No idea. But it was strange. The whole thing was surreal. Like Jono said at the start there, the fact that it was pretty much, here we go again, you know, 2 weeks off, first 11, right back on it. I don't know. This is a real challenge, isn't it? It's a real challenge for the squad. after they've had all those celebrations to sort of recalibrate, refocus, and then go again. And I'm hoping the fact that we play with such an intensity and we've had such unbelievable levels of consistency over the last couple of years, and obviously we have a level of fitness that I think's above and beyond pretty much any squad in the league. I'm hoping that even though we haven't maybe got the deepest squad, we're perhaps the best equipped for this like unique challenge that this season is going to present.
I'll come back to the deepest squad points in a minute, Ben, but part of what we haven't discussed, we've just done it so far in passing, is Naby Keita there as well. And I thought in that first 45 minutes, he was really, really bright. I think obviously we want to talk about Curtis Jones because he's exciting, he's from the City, he's a young prospect, but there's a lot riding on this little pre-season and start of the season for Naby Keita as well. And I thought he looked excellent. Almost every touch was assured. Knew exactly where he was on the pitch, knew where everybody else was. I was intrigued by seeing him come deep, pick it up off the centre-halves a tiny little bit more. But then obviously he gets in the box for his goal as well. Nice, intricate play. I think it was... I thought it was a really promising performance. And I don't mean that patronisingly. I was looking at it thinking, my God, this fella could get us 12 goals.
Yeah, he was excellent. He was the standout. Him and Curtis Jones, the standout first half. And I think... what you're seeing from him now is what you thought you were getting when we first signed him. I mean, you know, there was a lot of talk of his ability to beat players and his ability to create things, but what you actually see as well is someone who can dictate the pace of a game. I think he was involved in more passes first half than anyone else. He was involved in all the play, and he ran it. And you know, the pitch was horrible and uncomfortable.
John, just to come on to you on this, do you think that if he was, again, we mentioned Curtis Jones, 3 inches taller, you say that he ran it, and I completely agree, but do you think if he was a bit more clearly physically imposing, people would acknowledge that a bit faster, if he was 6'2", or if he was broader, or a bit of both, if he looked like Patrick Vieira, do you think he'd get more credit for when he runs a midfield? Because I thought he ran it as well, and yet it does feel as though people sort of half forget it, or because he's actually not very... He doesn't give it the big one whilst he runs it, if you know what I mean. He's just running it.
Yeah, no. He's running it by... He plays in a familiar, in a similar way, I think, to the way Joe Allen. We were told Joe Allen was going to play when we signed Joe Allen, and that he was the Welsh Messi. He was the Welsh Xavi, and he runs games with his little tiki-taka. And we signed him, and he wasn't eating tidy, but he didn't really run any games. But Keita has got the ability to do what Joe Allen did, but actually what we thought we were getting with Joe Allen. Do you know what I mean? He comes in and he runs games by just giving it and getting it back, and then playing the ball. It's all, I think, because it's so simple what he does. His awareness is so good. His positional sense is so good, and it's not just that you pick up on, because then he's got that part of his game, but your brain recognises the fact that he's just always just done someone there. And he's just beat three people there, and he's opened the game up. So he's got the ability to keep the ball and tick it over, but you don't really recognise that when you're watching it. You're looking out for the balance and the ability to just go past the man. He's one of the only ones on that pitch who doesn't really slip. Yesterday, he's getting the ball, he's still beating men. And I thought he was fantastic, and I think I thought it was interesting yesterday the way we played with Keita and Jones in that. And a very high line, defenders pushing into that midfield as well. You see Virgil's position, Joe Gomez's position a couple of times. The two fullbacks, if anything, were even higher than they normally are. And I thought that's a bit of a, yeah, this is where we're going to play. We're going to need goals from midfield, I think, we've earmarked this season. We're going to need goals from midfield. And I think that's what's interesting about Curtis Jones playing yesterday as well, in that, what Neil said before is what the takeout you get from watching him play centre midfield is he creates chances and he scores goals in almost every game he's involved in. Yesterday he turns and has a shot early on, and then 2 minutes later he realises he probably gets a bit of a bollocking off Mane. Mane says you should have gone right to the fullback because he can cross it to me back post for the tap in. 2 minutes later he's in again, he can shoot, he doesn't, he squares it, we score. And I think my takeaway from the game yesterday, you know, granted you're playing against, just promoted Bundesliga team, but my takeaway was the way we were trying to create chances from them to midfield positions. It was a big difference from having three workhorses in there. And I almost wonder whether we're going to set up in two distinct ways. Big games, you go, your Grafters in midfield, your Milner, Wijnaldum, if he's still here, whatever, Henderson, Fabinho, who graft and work, and we play the way we play that, you know, cup final 11. And yesterday's is all the periphery, you know, the three, the four at the back, all them. But the midfield is the difference, and it's almost a distinct way of playing against a certain type of opposition.
Just back to you on that one, Neil. I think that you are going to see. I, you know, one of the things that actually happens through the season, the six Champions League games coming back to back blocks. And I wonder what Ben's sort of saying there. It wouldn't surprise me if Liverpool do have a little bit of a look at it. And it might not be as simple as changing three midfielders every single match or anything like that. It might not be that blatant. But I do sort of wonder whether or not Liverpool might end up having, depending on the Champions League group, almost like this is the Champions League 11 and this is the League 11. And there might be four, five, possibly even six changes between the two when they've got them in rhythm there and going bang, ba, bang, ba, bang, ba, bang, as Jono says, and trying to find little different midfield pathways, because that's where Liverpool's intensity will come from.
Yeah, certainly. I think that would be a sensible approach. I mean, obviously, don't know the future yet of Genie, what the future holds for him. And obviously, Henderson isn't going to be involved, is he, for a month or so at least? But I do think we're going to have to rotate quite heavily. But then that's something that Jürgen's always been quite comfortable with doing. He's not afraid, is he, to mix the midfield up for certain occasions. I mean, just on Naby Keita, he could be the player of the season, as far as I'm concerned. I think he could genuinely be our player of the season. It's just a case of staying fit. We had that situation at the trophy lift, the game against Chelsea at Anfield, where you had John Barnes and Graham Souness at pitch side arguing about how long he'd been at the club, because Barnes had got it in his head that it was Keita's first season, and Souness was going, no, he came last year, he played in the Champions League last year when they won the Champions League, and John Barnes was having none of it. But that just shows that, you know, he's not been available enough, and that's the only thing that's held him back, because he's literally got everything in his locker, and his dribbling ability is just unparalleled. It really is. In our squad, his dribbling ability is unparalleled. His ability to open up a midfield with a drop of the shoulder is just sensational, really. And I just want to see him involved. I just want to see him playing week in, week out, and showing, not showing how good he is, but I think he transforms our play. I genuinely think he's a player that can take us up a level in terms of turning some of those one goal wins last season to two goal wins, to three goal wins, and then you're able to rest and rotate more easily because you can take off the big guns because the game's out of sight and the game's won. Whereas last season there were so many games where we had to go right to the end of matches. Even though we were in complete control, we only ever had like a one goal lead to show for it, so we had to keep at it. I've now been joined by some youngsters.
You deal with the youngsters, and I'll go over to Paddy.
So I may be putting mute on at this stage.
No problem at all. You deal with the youngsters, and I'll go over to Paddy. Paddy, it was interesting before Neil mentioned Liverpool's strength and depth, and the fact that we perceive our strength in depth to be a little bit weaker to some of our rivals. I think we often are sort of specifically talking about Manchester City there. But if I run through the midfield options that City currently have to start the season with, we've got Fabinho, Keita, Genie, Wijnaldum, Curtis Jones, Jordan Henderson, Milner and Oxlade-Chamberlain. I've not included Gruitt, Shaqiri or Minamino in there on this one. I've just stopped at those seven. If you look at City's, depending on what where they can play the Valencia lad Torres, who looks to me like more of a wide player anyway, but even if you include him, they've got De Bruyne, Torres, Rodri, Foden, Bernardo Silva, Fernandinho, Gundogan, and I'll be generous and include Zinchenko, who's a left back and views himself as more of a sort of a left mid. Now, other than the fact that De Bruyne is absolutely brilliant, I'd rather have our lads. I look at United and there's Bruno Fernandes, Pogba, they've got Matic, they've got Fred, they've got McTominay, and they might do something with Lingard or Daniel James. I'd much rather have our lads, despite a bit of the showiness of Fernandes and Pogba within that. And for me, that's quite telling, I think. And if you're talking about a season where it's going to be intense and numbers of games and etc., we should talk that advantage up and not be shy about it. This is what Liverpool are paying the big wage bill for, the fact that they've got that many quality midfielders.
Yeah, I think I might have been guilty in the past of thinking we haven't got the strength and depth that we do. And I think especially in midfield, I think it comes from the fact that what we ask of our midfielders is such a specific task, and it's so integral to the way we play that. At times, again, I've been guilty of thinking, and probably arguably rightly so, that maybe a Keita isn't exact. Like, the idea of not trusting someone like Keita, say, 12 months ago to come into our midfield because of the specific role that we ask of players and things, and looking at a Curtis Jones and thinking, is he quite ready? And obviously that's why now and yesterday's a promising signs, because I think it has felt that we haven't got the strength and depth, because you look at someone and you go, well, Milner's always first sub in the midfield because you trust him and he knows midfield well. But when you haven't got Henderson, Ronaldo and Fabinho, you do fear. And then, as I mentioned before, that game last season, when you think this was the midfielder, you know, Twitter was telling you that was our go-to midfield, this was the one that changed the game. And then for the first half, we didn't look like we had one. And I think on the points that people have mentioned about Keita, your point, Neil, about 12 goals, looking there, I am starting to see that. But I think the problem has been, maybe it's just me, but I haven't seen that at all from so far. And I think he's been neat and tidy. I think he's been a really good player. But I think to come into a Liverpool midfield, which a lot of people talk about him as a starter and have done for a while, I think you've got to have something either extra or be able to do whatever else is done. And I think it's fine that he isn't a direct prototype of Gino Ronaldo, that's fine. But when he's not getting your 12 goals either, well, then what are you doing to make a case for being in this team? And I think the more you see of him, as well as Jones, like we've mentioned, when you read that list out now, you do go, bloody hell, there's three different midfield combinations there. And with the games coming, think of us, like they are, you can sort of make a case for, you've got one midfield combination for the Champions League games and they're just going to play them, and they get to know each other and they work out what each other are best at. You've got one for midfield, you've got one midfield for home against the bottom 10, and then you've got one midfield for top six games, which might be the Champions League final team, and they're the combinations that you know, and the players know that, the front three know that, the defence know that, and they know what teams they're playing with. So I think it's more and more encouraging, the better Keita gets and the more Curtis Jones grows, that you're seeing the strength and depth more now. But I think that's why we haven't so far, is because we've not seen what we're seeing now just yet.
It's completely agree with Paddy there. It's players coming to the boil at the right time. That's going to be important for this Liverpool side, Ben. But there's a reason why people call, you know, I think where we feel is that we haven't got strength in depth, we're going to come on and have a bit of a chat about centre-half. And I think obviously because the front three are so definitively the front three, it is worth pointing that out. But you can choose where you're going to have greater strength. The Thiago link remains interesting. And I do just sort of wonder if, you know, Jurgen Klopp's very much of the view that the reason why they call it the engine room is because it is indeed the engine that will power a side. And this season, more than any, I think if there's an area to be overstocked in, I genuinely do think it's centre mid. This is not just me rigging the deck so that I get to say that I fancy Liverpool. I genuinely do think if there's ever a season to go into it and feel like you've maybe got one, maybe two too many midfielders, it's the one where you're asking lads to play most of the season, every 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, definitely. We've seen that over the course of the last 18 months, 2 years of you know, Klopp being in charge, in that he's. I think when he first come, he wasn't as you know, as ready to rotate as much as he. I think he had more of an idea that he had an 11 and he liked to play that 11. And I think he's changed. He's learned about the league a lot. And I think certainly over the course of the last 2 years, he's looked at his setup in midfield and he's looked at his setup as a side and thought, right, who am I asking the most of here? And it's these two midfielders either side of either Fabinho or Henderson. They have got the biggest job. Them and the fullbacks have got the biggest job, the biggest amount of ground to cover. So we need some options, because otherwise they're going to be goosed after 20, 30 games, especially if you're asking them to do 2 a week, 3 a week. I think you've seen that already. I agree. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain has almost played himself back into being a winger, in that when he plays in midfield, the last few times he's played, the last maybe 5-6 times he's played in centre midfield, one of them positions, he's been one of the first to come off. And I wonder if it's just not, you know, before he got his injury, he was just starting to get a handle on what it was, and he was starting to really impact games and really, you know, putting his name on the first team, you know, on the sheet. And you'd think, yeah, you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain against City in the Champions League was fantastic. And I think since then, when he's played centrally, he's struggled, and I wonder how much he's going to play centrally. I think he might be one of the options of left or right wing. It doesn't necessarily suit him. But I think it's about, I think you see some of the players in the squad and you almost have to treat them as if you know, this sounds harsh, but you're putting legs in, you're putting minutes in their legs to save other people's legs. So you're looking at games whereby Mane and Salah don't start, because they can't start every game. And it's Ujiravi who can do a job enough. He's got a goal threat. You can do a job. You can press. You can occupy. You can run at the ball over the top, so that we can have the ability to rest these lads, still win games, and if we need them, bring them on with 20 to go.
Well, the other thing on that, which was I thought interesting first off, and it happens four or five times in a way that I've not seen it happen, was how free Salah's role was. He pops up on the left. He's central to the left around the time of Keita's goal. When Firmino is on the pitch, and Firmino's also playing quite centrally as well, Ben. And I was really intrigued by this. It did look like something that had been worked on, something quite different. It did look to me as though Salah had been given a bit more licence. He pops up. I always remember the old, one of the things everyone sort of forgot about the Chelsea front three, which was Drogba, Duff and Robin, was how often Robin and Duff would actually be on the same side of the pitch. And no one would know what on earth we're meant to do with this now. And it did seem there was a little bit of that from Liverpool there yesterday. Salah did pop up repeatedly in areas where he normally doesn't even get near going unless the play just breaks there by accident.
I think I've seen the average positions of the first half, and it was very skewed to the left. Like Keita ran midfield from pretty much 10 yards off the touchline. Curtis Jones is almost very central, you know, in line with the centre spot. The right was left predominantly to the right back, you know, that was, and you do wonder whether that's a strategy, is that, well, we know because we've got Trent and his ability to basically run a game from right back, we would like to get some space for him. But also, B, we're comfortable that we can get the ball to him, we can look after it until people get over there. But I did notice that at the time, it was very, very heavily slanted to the left of the pitch. And you do wonder, they will have taken the opportunity, the coaching staff, to have a look and to refine and to come up with something slightly different to combat the same, you know, they expect teams to set up similar to us. And I think they've had a little look and thought, what can we tweak very slightly?
On that, I think it's really interesting with Salah, Paddy. Just from the point of view of also, it's maybe to an extent, also keeping it interesting and challenging for him. But we've seen him at times get locked into, I think almost get locked into battle in that channel that he plays through, where he's repeatedly getting pulled and dragged and fouled and... And he wins the battle most of the time. You know, he has the better of his man. But I wonder if they might be thinking, well, as an option in games, it'd be quite nice to be able to say to Salah, even if it's just for half an hour, just come off that flank now. Go and play centrally. And the other thing you get to see is, for instance, I think Liverpool's best assister last season. I understand why people love the one from Robertson for Salah against Manchester City, because of everything that it meant. But I think the best one could well be Salah at West Ham, when the through ball that he plays, when he just hits it right into the path. And I wonder whether or not they're thinking, well, you know, Salah's a really, really, really good footballer. Let's get him in the middle of the pitch and get him more involved, where he can be more creative.
Yeah, I wonder as well, just on like a sheer numbers point, you know, you look at like Salah's goal involvement and the amount of assists he gets, you wonder if they're looking at it just saying, well, why have him marked out by two people on that right-hand side? If you're looking at a Keita, for example, and going, we got more goals from him, and we think he's got a bit of a relationship on the pitch with Mane, and you know how many goals Mane scores, well, let's get Salah over there as well, because it's another body, it's another person to pass to in little triangles. So a bit like how Keita's goal yesterday, Salah's that far over, and it's a bit of a 1-2, isn't it? And he's that good of a footballer. He just knows Keita's going to make that run through, and he can give him it back like that.
What was interesting on that goal, Paddy, was they had a little point at each other afterwards.
Yeah.
And I always think that when players do the little point at each other afterwards, that's when they're doing and we've all worked on this, lads. This is the thing we've been working on, and look, it's just worked.
Yeah, almost as if Keita's saying something like, they've said before, whenever Salah's on your side, look at him for a 1-2. Salah's very good at that, holding it up with his back to goal and almost seeing the run that's behind him without even turning. There was a few times last season where it was like he had the new trick, which was the back heel, and he'd hold it up, back to goal, and then he could see who was making the run behind him before any of us seen it or the defender seen it, and he'd play it through to them. And I think he's that good at occupying defenders, because naturally they're just drawn to him. You've seen, and I don't know, think about Klopp trying new things. It was the start of 18-19, I mean, he'd scored 40 goals from the right that the season before, and Klopp sticks him as the main striker, just because he goes, defenders are going to be that obsessed with what he's doing, and they're going to be that occupied by him because he's just scored 40 goals the year before. Let's do this, and they won't be expecting this. And now your centre-halves, rather than your full-backs, are going to be stuck with them, and that's going to free up space for others. And I think just him naturally drifted over to that side. Like Ben made the point about Trent's got the whole of the side then to do as he pleases. But also I think Mane, I'll enjoy having him closer to him. I think whoever's playing the left, whether it be Keita, whether it be anyone like that, just a better footballer over that side, is going to just create more chances. And having him close to the goal as possible, I think it's only going to be better for us.
That's the first half covered. Second half, Neil, the main thing to keep your eye on, obviously, was Tsimikas. That was what was exciting, I thought, really. It was hugely entertaining. Obviously, James Milner giving him the fucking L treatment. Genuinely like a man who's only got so many sprints in him. So please do give it back to me when I make the run. There is, across the board, though, I actually thought where he stood out to me was Liverpool kept playing that high line. They kept getting in, but I thought he defended really well. I thought he was very, very aware of the danger that was around him in a way that, you know, for me, it wasn't the, he's not just coming here to be an attacking fullback. It's not that that's where his brain is. He's last man over a couple of times. He's on the cover. He's in the right-hand channel almost of the centre-halves on a couple of occasions. And I thought he did a good job of his defending duties.
The first thing I noticed about him, obviously, is his pace. His pace and his touch. He's obviously very comfortable on the ball. He can glide past the player. And he's got that kind of pace that I think is going to be of such a benefit, recovery pace. But he looked very comfortable defensively. And I was of the mind, having what I'd read about him, I was of the mind that he was very much an attacking fullback. But it didn't look to me like he was a player who, you know, his offensive qualities are at the expense of his defensive ability. So I don't know, it was very encouraging. And yeah, he got the flea in the ear from Milner. But obviously, he'll have to learn the patterns of play, and he'll have to learn, you know, our unique approach, really, under Jürgen. But, I mean, first impressions, yeah, obviously, he looks a real prospect.
There is in it, Ben, as he is on the cover there, and also in terms of getting used to the players who are around him, there is the odd unconventional positions that people do sort of take up. And I don't think it was any coincidence, actually, that Milner started the second half relatively close to him, because, you know, Milner almost at times, when he plays that midfield role, does almost play it as an auxiliary left back. You know, he's there and he's very, very conscious of it. But I just think that it must be a strange side to come into, the way in which the fullbacks are both treated, but also the way in which the midfielders are asked to interact with them, and that at times you are sort of a support role. And I think that'll take a little bit of getting used to for Tsimikas, but I thought it was all promising, to be quite honest with you, even though I thought that Stuttgart actually attacked very, very well in the second half.
Yeah, I think the right word to use is comfortable. You said it. He looked comfortable, especially on the ball. But also, he covers around one. If the start of the second half, I think they get in. I don't know whether he drops off too much and then has to make a really good tackle because it's to cover up that he dropped off and played everyone on, or if it was good defending, you know, you're not going to get a replay with the quality of the camera set up yesterday. But Klopp was interesting after the game. He got interviewed and he said, what did you think of him? And he said, we're to the effect of, when he had the ball, he was great. What he's got to learn is how we defend as a team. And I think you're right. What we're asking our players to do all over the pitch, never mind just the fullbacks or just the midfielders, but every role is so specific and it's so demanding that it is going to take a while. And I think when you look at Robertson when he signed, you know, Robertson's gone on to be probably one of the best left backs in the world, but you look at Robertson and we were watching it thinking, I remember watching, he played one game early on at home, he got man of the match, and then didn't play again till Moreno got injured about 6 months later, or whatever it was, what it sort of felt like, and constant, like, you know, say what you want about Moreno, he give you loads of entertainment, but he was decent, but he was crap as well. Do you know what I mean?
You knew he was playing.
You definitely knew he was playing. It was ideal to be able to, when you're doing something like match ratings or writing a report, he was perfect. You need more of them fellas, because if you've got that's one of the things of having a really good side, really good players, is you've got no one to poke fun at. But yeah, I remember watching Robertson thinking, why is he not playing Robertson? This is crazy. You know, he's clearly well better than Moreno. And then it's all about learning the patterns of play. And I think it'd be something similar. And, you know, I think what's encouraging is that he's got, he looked to have got what his role is meant to be, attacking wise, really quickly. And it was just interesting, Klopp saying that about his defensive positioning. But he looks like he wants to win. When he made that clearance, you know, it's a pre-season friendly, it's Lashin's arm. He covers around the front post, he covers it really well. He starts doling bollocks out, which is good. Do you know what I mean? He's brand new into the camp, doesn't know anyone, never met anyone before, and he's there saying, fuck's sake, lads, what he's playing at. I really, that's the type of thing where you think, yeah, that's right. Do you know what I mean? And that shows his character. And I think he'd be sound.
He came across like he would be sound. Other one, Paddy, who stands out second half, is Minamino. Looked close to the player who turned up to Anfield and absolutely dazzled us, to be quite honest with you. And I thought his in-and-out play was excellent. His ability to get it, turn, he loves a turn. He turns with panache and style. I thought he was really, really bright in every aspect of the game.
Yeah, I think he's another one as well who looks bigger, you know, as if they'd said to me, like, get in the gym or give him specific training things in between, you know, when the season finished to now, and as if he's been working on a pre-season as well. Because, like you said, his turning on the ball yesterday was very noticeable. It was a few times he just rolled a defender like it was nothing, but then there was also a few times with the way the ball, he turned someone, and the way the ball would hold up given the surface and how much water was on it, they'd have to hold someone off as well, and he'd have someone right on his back, and he just hold them off and get away from them again. And I think that's what encouraged me most, because I think there's no denying you can see a footballer there. You know, we've seen it when he came and played at Anfield, but and in other performances as well, he's looked good whenever he's had the ball on his feet. But that Wolves game always sticks with me when he first comes on, and it's harsh because it's his first game in English football. But
and Wolves are enormous.
Yeah, and he looks fine with the ball, but he gets the ball and he doesn't realise that you get 2 seconds before someone's on you. And then 2 seconds later, someone else is on you, and it's getting to grips with that thing that you're not going to be able to. You can do all you want with the ball, but you've got to bear in mind whilst you're doing it that someone's going to close you down instantly, and whoever does that's going to be massive and strong. So you've got to be able to have all these things spin and plate. You've got to have all these things going on at once, where you're holding off 2 defenders whilst looking for your pass. It's not as simple as you've got the ball at your feet and you're looking in front of you, going, "Wait, what's next?" And I think the sooner he gets to grips with that, I think I do see a good player in him. I think that was what was encouraging yesterday. He didn't, you know, these aren't, you know, just some Sunday league team, you know, the German outfit that, you know, there were some big lads playing yesterday, and he didn't look like he was bullied or pushed about on a sticky surface. You know, he did play really well, and I think that was encouraging.
I was encouraged by him, Neil. I was encouraged by, you know, you get to see yet again, you know, the most magical moment of the match really is Harvey Elliott's cushioned ball back to James Milner. Brewster obviously gets his goal. You know, all three, I think, of those front three players yesterday, you get some encouragement from. But I did feel as though Minamino was the one who looked first, like the one who's obviously, because it's true, played the most first team football, but also the one who looked closest to first team football, Minamino.
Yeah, I mean, Minamino is always bright. He's always bright, and his all-round play impresses me. He works, you know, diligently. He's got a really good touch. I just wonder if he's trying a little hard to perhaps by Jürgen. He's trying to make sure he sticks to his task, and I just wish he'd be a little bit more determined to make an impact on a game in an attacking sense. You know how we talked about Curtis Jones,
yeah,
how he always seems to be involved in creating something. He always seems to either set up a chance or score a goal. With Minamino, we know he's got that. We know he's got that creativity. And I almost like him to be a little bit more self-mark. I think we've seen a lot of encouraging anything decisive. And that's what's frustrating, because we've obviously seen glimpses when he came to Anfield, you know, as an opposition player, of just how impactful he can be on games. So I almost want him to, you know, to take a shot. I know that goes against every rule that you have, every fibre of your being. But I want to see him take a shot from distance. I want to see him try something and almost say, I'm going to make an impact, you know, in the limited amount of time that I get.
There's something on the impact thing, Ben. There's something with Brewster in amongst that, really, where, you know, I think that there's still that sort of sense as to, other than the really obvious part of kicking the ball in the goal, what sort of forward Brewster's going to be. And I still can't entirely answer that yet. You know, who are the players who he seems like to me? He looks absolutely brilliant at what's meant to be the hardest part. All the stuff around the penalty area, you know, if we sold Brewster hypothetically and you said to me, but he's going to get 25 league goals somewhere, I wouldn't go, that's mad, there's no way on earth he does that. And that's a really strange thing to say, but he scores yesterday, but you're still not entirely sure literally what type of forward he is.
He looks to be a traditional number nine in that he just scores, he scores, and he scores. And his movement, it's a natural instinct. You know, the movement for his goal, he just drifts 2 yards away from his man. That's instinctive. He's aware of where it is. My best chance, Aldridge talked about it, he's in the position in between the posts always, where it's the best position to be as a forward. And it's where you get goals. Now, you do look at him and think, how are you going to fit into this Liverpool team with them front three, because of the role Firmino plays and because of how unusual a forward he is, a number nine. He's almost the polar opposite of Brewster. So you then wonder, well, yeah, you look like you might score 20 goals if you play every game, but what's the impact of picking you in terms of everybody else's output, if you know what I mean? Because Firmino's so unique and he gives you so much that you do wonder where he gets a game, and it's whether there's an appetite for them to do that just yet, or whether they think, look, we know he's a player, we know he's going to score goals, but we need a little bit more certainty of what his output's going to be before we can guarantee him. You know, there's no point keeping him at Liverpool at this age of his career and playing him 5 times over the course of the season. I think you can see some players like Curtis Jones last year stays and works his way into a position where he's now, you know, could be a starting player. I don't think if Brewster stays, that happens. I think he's that type of player. It's almost like when you're playing a centre-half. Centre-halves need to play games to learn all the tricks of where to be, what's expected, blah, blah, blah. And I think some players need that. And Brewster looks like... saying he needs it, it's almost disrespectful. But I think in terms of Liverpool knowing exactly what they're going to get out of him and whether it's worth the impact on the balance in the team, I think he might end up going for another year somewhere.
What do you expect from him, Paddy, in that regard? Because I think I can see the arguments in both directions, but the one thing I know is I like the player a lot, and obviously I like lads who score goals a lot, and I like the sort of goals that he scores a lot. And when he's at Swansea, for instance, and he scores that goal in the playoff final, that shows, you know, all the quality he's got under pressure at key moments in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net. But it's a difficult one, isn't it, for Liverpool? I suspect the very conversation that Ben's had is one that they're having internally still within the coaching team and with Michael Edwards.
Yeah, I don't want this to sound like a lazy comparison, but I think, as Ben was talking there, I think what came to me was the amount of games Solanke got, 17-18. I think when we talk about, is there room for a traditional number nine in this Liverpool side, I think Solanke scored loads of goals that pre-season, and Klopp obviously seen something and thought, well, I can use him. And I think if you actually look back on that season, he plays more than people think, and I think Klopp must have looked at that and thought...
He gets loads of appearances, Solanke. People forget it, but don't they, Paddy?
Yeah, he gets that start at Stoke away, doesn't he? And I always look back on that and think, could it have been differently? Because he has a couple of chances early on in that first half, and he looks a decent player, and he's into Lincoln well with the front three and things, and he has a couple of chances himself that don't quite go his way and stuff. And I think, whenever I think about Brewster now, I think... I think there is real quality there, and like you said, he's good at all the stuff that you're supposed to be good at. It's just that we've had this lad the last 4 years that we've stumbled on. You can do all these other things that no one ever thought you wanted from a number nine, and now he's done them. And we can't think of having anyone other than Firmino. And I think the only thing from yesterday, I think that I thought was quite interesting as well with Brewster is, and we spoke about Minamino before, but Minamino's often talked about as this deputy for Firmino. And I thought it was interesting yesterday in his performance that he's still on the left. And we all keep talking about Minamino as this, he's the alternative to Firmino, or we can mould him like that. And I wonder if Klopp's looking at it going, well, I think he's great, but we ask that much of Firmino, and he's such a special, unique player that I'm not sure we can just go, all right, well, you're the Firmino light. And I think him playing on the left and Brewster playing through the middle was sort of telling yesterday, in the sense that I sort of took encouragement that might be a sign that Brewster might be your number two for who's going central, or, you know, another option to Firmino. I think he's not been. I think Origi's a different case when Origi plays up front. I think he's a completely different player, and I think Klopp's shown in the fact that he keeps him last summer that it's a very specific thing.
The thing I'd like to see, Paddy, when we're talking about this season and the way it's going to go, the intensity, the number of games, is I wouldn't mind seeing Liverpool have a game where they play, you know, maybe it might be Tuesday, even if it's just for a half, 4-2-3-1, but with Brewster as the one, where you're saying it's now a little bit different, the way you structure your phases of play are a little bit different, but 4-2-3-1, and maybe that is Minamino behind Brewster, somebody off the left and maybe Shaqiri off the right. You know, I would like to sort of see what that looks like, see how that operates before you make any sort of big Brewster decisions, because yeah, we love the 4-3-3, the manager loves the 4-3-3, but it does not feel as though you're asking a lot of these players if that's what you're going to go game after game after game after game.
I think as well, on that point, we do love the 4-3-3, but on the point about game after game, I think, like we've just said, then if Minamino isn't your deputy for Firmino, I don't know how you do a 4-3-3 without Firmino. I think whenever we've seen the 4-3-3 without Firmino, and it's Origi as the left and one of Salah or Mane as the striker, I'm not doubting their ability to play up front. You know, we've seen both of them have really good games as a central striker. I just don't think it works as a three in a traditional 4-3-3 sense when you've got one of them as the middle one. And I think Brewster, I think there's that much potential and that much quality that you can already see. I mean, I wouldn't be making any hasty decisions on what to do with him now. I think I would like more of a look at him. And I think young players, I think you walk such a thin line with young players in the sense that, I mean, he could go out on loan next season, and whenever people talk about loan to him, they talk about Premier League. And my only thing with that is I don't know a club where he starts every week that you can guarantee it, because he could go to a Sheffield United who want more goals or whatever from strikers, and they don't start well first 5-6, and he's dropped then, and that's fine because they've got their own things to sort out. And Wilder might think, you know what, I like the look of him, but I just want to stick to what I know. And I think even Championship, he could join a really promising Championship side on loan again, like Swansea were when he joined in January. And what if it's just not going well for them, and a manager gets sacked, and a new manager comes in who doesn't quite like him or wants to play a different way? And I think then that's another year of his career gone, and with 12 months time we're talking about him again. I think right now, when he's got bags of confidence, he's coming off a really successful loan spell, and we're in such a great position that we're in, I think now's the best time for him maybe to stay here. Yeah. And I'm confident he can get games, but as you said, I would like a look at it, but you know, we'll see if that happens in the next few weeks.
The manager in the past, he's changing it now. It's Ben of the four, you know, if you go back, it was mentioned before, the 18-19 season, you know, you think about that season, and actually there's not as much, by the time Liverpool get to the turn after Christmas, it's 4-3-3 almost every game, but there's a fair bit of Salah number 9, there's a fair bit of 4-2-3-1 in 18-19, more of it than we sort of choose to remember now, and I do wonder whether or not part of what he might be looking at across the course of this season, because it's one of the ways in which you can rest the fullbacks a little bit more, I'd argue, is that, you know, 4-3-3, the left with the whole flank, 4-2-3-1, they've got players more likely to be in front of them. I wonder if we might see a little bit more of a shape. And I think the other thing, just to bore on a little bit more, is last season Liverpool starts so well in this quest to rest the league off Manchester City. You know, the manager, he's not going to change it whilst it's working. And guess what? It just keeps working game after game after game after game after game after game. So he's not going to change it whilst it's working, because he's got a job to do, which is win the league. This season, it might not be a smooth passage for Liverpool.
Yeah, I agree, mate. Shaqiri plays a lot that 18-19 in that when it, and I think that was almost because you didn't know what you could get out of Shaqiri running the other way, so we had to alter the setup a little bit. I think we played, was it Stoke? Was it Stoke or Southampton, where Shaqiri scores, was man of the match first half, gets took off at half time. Mark Hughes was manager. I can't remember who he was managing at the time. I think it was Southampton. But yeah, I think the discussion around Brewster, you know, if you're struggling to break a team down, or if you've got 11 men camped in the box, the stuff we were talking about before about the midfielders being a little bit higher up the pitch, and a little bit more of a goal threat, you do wonder whether you substitute Firmino's playmaker role by one of your centre midfielders being a bit more creative, and you allow your centre forward, i.e. Brewster, to just stand in the box, and if it comes near him, to bang it in the goal. There's no shame in that. I mean, that's sad. You know, you can question someone's output loads, but if he's banging 20 goals a season in the league, you can't really. Do you know what I mean? You know, when you look back at centre forwards in on Premier League years, if someone's slotting 20 goals, it's hard. You, do you know what I mean? So you do wonder whether, if you're asking me, would I rather Brewster done that role in Origi? I think last season tells you a lot about Div in terms of, I think Divock's just such a mad player in that he doesn't really do anything, but he can do everything, but he doesn't really do anything. I think he's sort of got in a funny place in his head in terms of what he actually is as a footballer, and that's probably partially our fault because of Firmino and because of what we're asking Firmino to do. But I think if you're looking at it, you know, you look at Brewster's ability to score, I think it's right up there. He just looks a natural at it. And you do sort of, you are intrigued as to what you might get out of him if he manages to play. Let's put it that way.
Last little thing, Neil, is the centre-halves. Phillips gets the whole half, and I think that's been somewhat overlooked because there's been talk about Vandenberg for over a season and then Kumetio getting the late shout into the camp and the pair of them being as physically imposing as they are. I think it's slightly rude to Phillips. As I say, he's the one the manager goes with for 45 minutes. Obviously, he's played Stuttgart before, so he knows them a little bit. But that said, you can see exactly why Liverpool paid the money they paid for Vandenberg last year and why Kumetio is so highly thought of by the Liverpool coaching staff, because the pair of them are very, very imposing, and Kumetio shows his passing range as well over the course of his 25 minutes.
Yeah, and you know, their physical presence was obvious, wasn't it? And I think we're in an interesting situation at centre half because obviously Lovren's left, and a lot of us are thinking, well, who's coming in? And we have the situation where Fabinho can obviously slot in there. But the conversation we had earlier about, you know, our options in midfield and how heavily we're going to have to rotate our midfield options, do we really want to be playing Fabinho, playing Fab at centre-half for any extended period of time? I probably don't think so. I mean, I know that Jürgen likes to find solutions in the squad, doesn't he? It seems if ever there's an issue, he'd rather, you know, shuffle things around and try something different rather than go to the transfer market. But I still feel that we could do with some cover at centre-half. And, you know, it's one thing impressing, you know, in a pre-season game at Stuttgart, and it's another thing being thrown into, you know, a really important Premier League fixture. And so, I don't know. I think there's work for us. We've not really talked about the transfer market much because it's been such a strange summer. But I do think there's still work for us to be done. On the Brewster question, well, is Origi staying? I mean, because if Origi's not staying and it feels like it's time for him to leave the club, then do we really want Brewster to go out on loan as well? We still do have commitments in the League Cup and the FA Cup. And then again, at centre-half, I think there's work to be done. I don't think I'd feel entirely confident if we were going into the season, you know, as we are right now.
And that's really fair from Neil Paddy. And I think, I suspect it's a question that doesn't yet have an answer fully from Liverpool's staff. And people may feel as though that's a little bit fly by night, but I don't think it is. I think it's a difficult one to gauge. And you've always got the impression this is a manager who did buy Ranyar Klavan. But you've also always sort of got the impression that the manager would rather try to buy first choice players or players he feels are first choice players than backup players. Though that said, you know, he's brought Tsimikas in this summer as well. I'm still not clear which way that's going to sort of resolve itself, and I also sort of get the impression that maybe I'm imposing something here, but I get the impression Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp don't really rate many centre-halves, and certainly in terms of the way in which they play. So it makes it feel really hard to recruit this lad who's going to come in, be happy to be fourth choice, but he's good enough to be able to play basically in their half.
Yeah, I think what you said is right in the sense that he does sign Klavan that summer, but I was thinking about it before, and I think you wonder how much that was sort of player and personality motivated. He talked a lot when he signed Klavan about how he'd watched him for 3 years in Germany and how good he'd been every time he played Dortmund. And when you say that, Neil, about how he's looking around going, where are all the good centre-halves? And I've heard people say on shows, you know, we might sign a Klavan. Well, maybe there's not a Klavan out there. You know, Klavan did the job for 2 years and he was sound and he was good and he was 29 and he was cheap. But, I mean, I can't tell you where the next Klavan is, and the fact that we haven't signed another Klavan yet in the window suggests to me that Klopp doesn't necessarily know where the next Klavan is. And I think he signs Klavan that window, but he also sells Sacho, and that essentially leaves you. That's a somebody bin Sacho off, and that leaves you with Lovren and Matip as your centre halves, literally the only centre halves at the club, really. And as much as it was player motivated and things, I think he does think he's got to get one in, and that leaves you with Clavin, Lovren and Matip, and what turns out to be that season, Lucas. And I think it's sort of similar to this season in the sense that because they've sold Lovren, they've got Van Dijk, Gomez and Matip. And then we've all talked about Fabinho as essentially the Lucas, you know, the midfielder who can play centre-half. But I think he's more happy to let Lucas do that because he knows he's got, at the time, Chan and Henderson who can both play defensive midfield or six, whatever you want to call it. And I think it's been mentioned on a few of the shows, but I think a lot of this, and I'm sure it gets talked about on other times, but it's Thiago dependent. I think that's why he's looked at him, because I think if you look at it and go, well, I've got Thiago and Fabinho and a bit of Henderson as my six options, I'm more likely to go, well, yeah, Van Dijk and Gomez, I've got better injury records than Lovren and Matip a few years ago, so I'm trusting them that I won't have to use Fabinho as much as I use Lucas, who plays a lot of that season centre half. So I'm more comfortable with it, and he's got the young lads. So I think again, it's Thiago dependent. I think if there was a Clavin out there, I'd be all in favour of buying it, because I think he did a really good job for 2 years, but I don't think there is.
I think if you could get Tarkowski or me for £5 million quid, he'd probably buy Tarkowski or me. But I think it's part of the English market. I think it's part of the general sort of worldwide centre-half dearth, in a sense as well, that's just not possible. But I think that Paddy may be right there. I think that if he had a £5 million diddle, he might just press the button and do a £5 million diddle.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the looking at what's available and thinking, well, we're not going to spend £40 million quid on Tarkowski or whatever. I think they've had a look at him, haven't they, for a few years. We got linked with him a few years ago. He was a good player. But to prize him out of Burnley, unless he's in the last year of his contract, you've got no chance. Unless you're prepared to pay a lot of money. We're not going to. You know, I just don't see a scenario where we're going to do that at this point. I think the centre-half issue boils down to, if Virgil stays fit, we'll be fine. And if Virgil gets injured, we might be fucked. And I think it's that straightforward, because I'd be happy playing any of them three who played the second half yesterday, if Virgil's the one who's alongside them. If I'm honest, you know, he mightn't be as strong, but Virgil's so good that he gets you out of a lot of trouble against most of the teams you will get up against. You know, most sides will not be able to compete against Liverpool if Virgil's playing in defence and the rest of the team is pretty much full strength apart from one centre-half. I think you could play Virgil on his own against 14 of the teams in the league, let's put it that way. And I think the worry I would have if we don't sign anyone is what happens if Virgil gets injured. Now, he might not. He didn't last season. He's that type of player that he doesn't exert himself anywhere near as much as the remainder of the outfield players.
Just on this, Ben, though, it's worth saying, for instance, it's Nat Phillips and Joe Gomez who play centre-half against Everton in the Cup. And Gomez is excellent that night. Like, Gomez, I think, goes up a level that night, and I think that's part of what's got him up to that level. Now, that was obviously against an Everton side who were planning to be psychologically broken over the course of the evening, and fair play to them, they saw that through. But there is, that, you know, within there, you know, you do wonder if that did happen. But then my next question is, let's say you do lose Van Dijk for, say, a month, hypothetically, which would be terrible news. The next question on that, which worries me, is more, and Gomez's injury record, whilst it's better than it has been in the past, and whilst it's better than Lovren and Matip's has been, I'm then hugely concerned that, well, we're in real trouble if something happens to Gomez. Yeah.
And I think that's, you look at what we've done with the left back, and you look at the left back decision, and you think I think that's predominantly made because we know we're going to have to play, we're going to have to shuffle in that position, we're going to have to swap, because we know that's the case. And I think you're going into a season where the players are going to be running to the ground more than ever, and I'd just be a little bit uncomfortable if you're asking three centre halves effectively to play 60 games in 3 months or whatever, you know what I mean, in the most, you know, constricted season ever. So I don't know if we'll do something. I'm not sure. When you look at the three lads who played second half, I'm not sure the quality of Phillips, to be honest. I think he struggles on the ball, and I wonder how much of a game he'd get. I think he'd be one, literally, if you had players injured, then he might play. But other than that, there's not much. I don't see a long-term career for him at Liverpool. And I think looking at it, I think Van den Berg's years away. I think he's too slow. And I think he needs to learn the art of covering for his lack of pace. So I think he's years away. So I do worry if we didn't have another centre half, but I worry about everything. I worry about Liverpool not having enough midfielders. I'd buy Thiago tomorrow. Just say, yeah, just I don't care, just get in. And I'd buy another forward. Do you know what I mean? I don't care. I don't have to keep them all happy. I just want Liverpool to have 11 great players on the pitch at every one time. Buy another keeper.
Why not? All right, then. Thank you very much this week to Neil, to Paddy, and to Ben. The connection was a little bit in and out for everybody at some stage of proceedings there, but I'm sure it'll all be pulled together magically within the edit. It's been a pleasure. Loads of fantastic shows this week, and do check out on the video stuff, My Favourite Game. People looking back at their favourite outing for the Reds, and with one exception, over the course of the 1920 season. It's been a fabulous little series. Do check it out. It's available on video. Lots of other fabulous stuff as well. It is all on the Anfield Wrap. To subscribe, it's the Anfieldwrap.com/subscribe, and now would be a perfect time, and the reason why is because the season has started. Liverpool played the Community Shield in about 4 minutes. All the best up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.